All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is September 16th, 2025. It is the first day of the FOMC, the Fed's Open Market Committee meeting. And the top story this morning is Lisa Cook is going to be there. A federal appeals court ruled yesterday, basically rejected President Trump or the Trump administration's appeal of a lower court ruling where they tried to fire her. A lower court ruled she can stay in the job pending charges, trials, you know, the whole like the way the justice system works thing. And the appeals court said, yeah, right now the president doesn't have cause to fire Lisa Cook. And what is the president's cause to fire Lisa Cook? Besides the fact that they should all be freaking fired for raising the cost of living by more than 30% in the last few years, right? Besides all that, besides they all suck at their job and they have put 375 million Americans in the poorhouse, that notwithstanding, what do they have to fire Lisa Cook? Bill Pulte said a thing. That's it, right? Bill Pulte said she did fraud. Well, okay, Bill Pulte, let's see your evidence. Oh, we haven't seen the evidence. There's actually conflicting stories in the press. Some say she claimed it as her primary residence. Some say she claimed it as a second home. By the way, even claiming it as a second home, if it was an FHA mortgage, you're not allowed to have an FHA mortgage for a second home. So I'm not sure that even rules out fraud. But I digress. Present your evidence, charge her with a freaking crime, hold a trial. And if she's guilty, punish her. Like Bill Pulte says a thing is not a reason to fire somebody. And I can't help but wonder, Kugler, the other Fed governor who resigned very abruptly, even though she only had a few months left in her term at the Federal Reserve, were they blackmailing her? Guys, I got to wonder. And look, if you're sitting here wondering, and you guys know me, I am no champion of the Federal Reserve. I'm never going to run to their defense. I can't stand the organization. I think it shouldn't exist. That being said, I always imagine what happens if the other side is in charge and they do the same thing. And let's imagine it is President Kamuna right now is in charge at the, you know, in D.C. And she wants to wipe out all of the Fed governors and put modern monetary theory. She wants to make the Fed a board of one. And it's, I don't know, what's that one guy's name? Oh, I can't remember his name, that idiot from the New York Times. Some modern monetary idiot. You're going to put her, you okay with that? Are you okay with the other side having that power? If the answer is no, then you shouldn't be okay with our guy having that power or with your guy having that power. So again, I have mixed feelings on this. No love for Lisa Cook, no love for the Fed. I do not want the Fed. If we must have one, it should not be an instrument of easy monetary policy whenever the president wants it to be. That being said, two other topics that warrant at least a little bit of attention and mention: arbitrarily blowing up boats in the Caribbean. I also have no love for Venezuela or the socialist slash communist government in charge of Venezuela, nor do I have love for the medieval barbarians who are running the South American and Central American drug cartels. That being said, arbitrarily blowing up boats in international waters, what kind of controls are in place there? And once again, if the other side was doing it, would you be cool with it? If the answer is no, again, I could go either way on that one. And last but not least, President Trump's push yesterday to get rid of quarterly filings for American companies, claiming that it places an undue compliance burden on American companies. Horse shit. All right. Well, bullshit. Let's just call it what it is. That is freaking bullshit. We are in the golden age of fraud. Every day, another freaking fraud breaks. Crypto scams, AI scams, private equity scams, private credit scams, pump and dumps. They are everywhere. Getting rid of quarterly reporting requirements will only make that worse. That is the worst possible thing we could do right now. So all three of those things. I think POTUS is worthy of a little bit of criticism on that one, or a lot of bit of criticism in some cases. Also going on this morning, guys, we've got the U.S. and China are reportedly close to a deal on TikTok, and not a moment too soon. TikTok ban goes into effect tomorrow. So they better get that deal done. Now, the rumor has it that ByteDance is going to be divesting their U.S. interests in TikTok. And that Oracle is now rumored to be the buyer. That's the same Oracle that, you know, rallied like 50% last week on the magic pixie dust of the $300 billion OpenAI deal, which, you know, nobody has money to pay for that or You remember that whole big spiel I did last week about Oracle? Well, now Larry Ellison, who is no longer the richest man in the world, by the way. Elon bought $1 billion of his own stock, driving Tesla higher. So Larry Ellison is back to number two. So sorry, Larry. But now Larry is taking another shot at number one by maybe trying to buy himself a media empire via Oracle buying TikTok. That's interesting. We'll probably have more to talk about with that one tomorrow. We've got Google parent Alphabet has joined the $3 trillion club. Google is now worth more than $3 trillion in total market cap. They're joining NVIDIA, Apple, and Microsoft in the $3 trillion club. That's after favorable antitrust rulings, and the news broke yesterday that Gemini is now the number one free app in the App Store. So Google is getting in on the AI mania, $3 trillion. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, $3 trillion. Yeah, that's old news, a company with a $3 trillion market cap. Not really. I remember when Apple broke $1 trillion, and it was not that long ago. What the hell are they doing to the dollar? By the way, gold and silver just keep rising. We've got Japan is resisting Trump's call for secondary tariffs on Russian oil, targeting India and China in particular. And it's worth mentioning that the EU is also resisting those calls. Guys, the war in Ukraine is not going to end via tariffs. My personal opinion, it was a mistake to lump the Ukrainian war in with the goals of the trade war, trying to use tariffs to solve every problem to a hammer. Everything looks like nails. Yeah, I get that. The rest of the world is not going along with secondary tariffs on Russian oil. It looks like it's just not happening. We've got Dave & Buster's earnings came out. They were just atrocious, guys. People don't want to pay overpriced prices for drinks to play overpriced video games. Consumers are hurting. Dave & Buster's going down the toilet. We got a big spike in jobless claims last week. I remember we were talking about that 30,000 spike in jobless claims that was reported. Well, according to one of the economists over at Bloomberg and the Texas Workforce Commission, that spike in jobless claims was caused by fraud. That's an interesting one. We'll talk about that one. Retail sales up 5% year over year. That's pretty solid. And China has a new plan to try to juice consumption in the services sector. Some more half measure stimmies coming out of the Chinese this morning. Guys, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. And as always, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for your new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day. Right now, the S&P 500 is still in positive territory, although it is giving up most of its pre-market gains, currently up 6 points or 0.1% higher ahead of the open. The Dow is in negative territory by about 55 points or 0.12%, and it looks like the sell-off is accelerating a little bit here. The NASDAQ, meanwhile, is in positive territory, up 48, almost 49 points, 0.2% higher for the NASDAQ. So we got a mixed bag in stocks this morning. The dollar is weaker once again, 97.01. We're down 35 basis points, threatening a 96 handle. That weak dollar continues. That is putting upward pressure on asset prices, of course, stocks, but also precious metals. Looking over at the bond market this morning, we have got higher yields on the long end, lower yields on the short end. We've got the yield curve steepening a little bit here this morning. The 30-year Treasury, 4.669. That's higher by about a point and a half. The 10-year is at 4.047. That's higher by a point and change. The 2-year is at 3.532, down just a fraction of a point. And the 1-month is down almost 2 points, 4.121 for the 1-month Treasury. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is higher once again this morning. $8 higher, not that much, about 0.23%. $3,687 for spot gold. And notice that front month futures contract, $3,724 for December gold futures, guys. $3,700 handle for gold. How do you like that? Silver is also up this morning, $42.79 for spot silver. That's up 11 cents or a quarter of 1%. And that front month silver contract for December, $43.24. That's up 27 cents. I like the shiny. You guys may have heard that before. Copper, meanwhile, down about 0.6%. Platinum is off 0.2%. Palladium is down by about 0.9%. And oil grinding higher again here this morning, up 78 cents, $64.08 for October WTI futures. That's higher by about 1.25%. Looking over at Bitcoin, once again, watch that 50-day moving average. Currently priced $115,410 on Coinbase. Basically unchanged from where we were yesterday. I've been watching that 50-day moving average, the line in blue, guys. We broke above that last Thursday. We came down, retested that almost to the penny yesterday, rejected that level and moved a little bit higher. I'm not quite ready to call that a retest yet. I'd like to see us move a little bit higher from here before I start to celebrate. But keep in mind, guys, crypto winter just around the corner. Be careful on leverage as always. And watch that about 114.4 level. That's the 50-day moving average right now. All right, let's talk about this story this morning. Besides Lisa Cook, who's not going anywhere, there's not a lot to cover on Lisa Cook, so we're just... The court said she stays, so she stays. She's going to vote in the FOMC. I don't think it matters. The Fed is going to go 25 cents anyway, or 25 points. But this one is new. U.S. and China have a framework for a TikTok deal, and they better get that done pretty soon. The U.S. and China have a framework for a deal on TikTok. On Monday, President Trump alluded to the move via a post on Truth Social, saying that the countries had reached a deal for a certain company that young people in our country very much wanted to be saved, hinting at TikTok. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent confirmed that the countries had the makings of a deal. Okay, it's not a deal, but the makings of a deal, that's important, saying that China wants to keep some Chinese cultural aspects of the app. TikTok is set to go offline September 17th. OMG, that's tomorrow. Unless parent company ByteDance divests itself of majority ownership of the social media app or Trump extends the deadline. We do kind of govern crisis to crisis here, 90-day extension to 90-day extension, so maybe we do that again. He's already given the app a number of lifelines by extending its drop-dead date and has refused to enforce a law banning it. Trump initially raised concerns about TikTok during his first administration, moving to kill the app on national security grounds. The government claims that Chinese officials could use the service to spread propaganda or otherwise manipulate users in the U.S. And TikTok has been something of a cesspool the last couple of days for other reasons we don't need to get into here. But Trump has repeatedly claimed that a number of deep-pocketed parties are interested in buying the app. Oracle is the current frontrunner in the contest. The company's stock price rose more than 5% before the bell Tuesday on the report. According to the original law banning the app, TikTok's Chinese parent company would be able to own only 20% of the social media platform. TikTok, like NVIDIA, has become a political volleyball in the ongoing U.S.-Chinese trade negotiations, which are taking place in Europe as we speak. So we'll probably hear more about this in just the next few hours. But for now, Oracle stock is up another 2.7% here. It was up 3.5% yesterday, trading at $310.79, still way up from where it was before the announcement of earnings and that 500% increase in their, what did they call it? Remaining performance obligations, their backlog. So Oracle may come out of this owning TikTok as well. Meanwhile, Alphabet becomes the fourth company to reach the $3 trillion market cap. Now, what's a few trillion among friends? Apple has joined the $3 trillion club. Shares of the search giant jumped more than 4% on Monday, pushing the company into territory occupied only by NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Apple. The company ended the day with a market cap of $3.05 trillion by market's close. The stock got a big lift in early September from an antitrust ruling by a judge whose penalties came in lighter than shareholders had feared. The U.S. Department of Justice wanted Google to be forced to divest its Chrome browser, and last year a district court ruled that the company held an illegal monopoly in search and related advertising. But Judge Amit Mehta decided against the most severe consequences proposed by the DOJ, which sent shares soaring to a record. After the big rally, President Trump congratulated the company and called it a very good day. Alphabet shares right now up another $1.18, about a 0.5% higher ahead of the open, $253.03. Again, market cap over $3 trillion. Meanwhile, Japan pushes back on U.S. call for tariff hikes over Russian oil. Those secondary tariffs, mainly targeting Indian purchases of Russian oil. Guys, it looks like they are going nowhere here. Japan's finance minister pushed back against a U.S. call to ramp up pressure on President Vladimir Putin to end the war in Ukraine by imposing higher tariffs on China and India for importing Russian oil. Japan has made a commitment within the framework of the World Trade Organization not to apply tariffs beyond its stipulated limits and to treat all member countries fairly as long as others uphold their obligations under WTO agreements, Finance Minister Katsunobu Kato told reporters on Tuesday. It would be difficult for us to raise tariffs to, say, 50% solely on the basis that a particular country is importing oil from Russia, he added. Cato's comments came after the Group of Seven Nations discussed sanctions on Russia in an online meeting Friday. During the session, the U.S. urged its G7 allies to consider tariffs as high as 100% on China and India due to their continued purchases of Russian oil. Guys, this just isn't going to happen. I mean, right now, the European Union and India are involved in a free trade agreement, or they're trying to negotiate a free trade agreement. That's been going on for weeks. They're supposedly going to reach one by the end of the year. Big tariffs on oil, or big tariffs on India because of their purchases of Russian oil, would probably derail that. And as much as Europe talks a big game about bringing the war in Ukraine to an abrupt conclusion, I don't think they're willing to risk a free trade deal with India over that. So it just looks like this isn't going to happen, guys. I mean, these peace talks in Ukraine are going nowhere. The war is still raging. People are still being fed into the grinder. And sadly, it looks like that's just not going to change anytime soon, at least not because of tariffs. Also going on this morning, Dave & Buster's same-store sales drop as CEO points to execution missteps. Rough time for the restaurant industry, guys, and Dave & Buster's is a pretty expensive restaurant. Dave & Buster's logged another quarter of declining same-store sales as it banks on a new CEO to help drive a turnaround that sticks. CEO Taryn Lau, who took the helm at the Arcade restaurant operator in July, said he has identified several previous missteps, including too many promotions, lack of team member training, and overemphasis on appetizers. Shares slid 16% to $20.41 in after-hours trading Monday. The stock is down 17% so far this year through market close. Comparable sales fell 3% in the period, steeper than the 2.2% decline modeled by analysts, a trend that is continuing in the current quarter, the company said. In the second quarter, the Dallas-based company posted a profit of just $11.4 million or 32 cents a share. Compare that with $40.3 million or 99 cents a share in the same period a year earlier. I mean, their profits just got eviscerated at Dave & Buster's. Adjusted earnings per share were 40 cents, missing the 92 cents modeled by analysts. That's a big miss there. Revenue was roughly flat from a year ago at $557.4 million. So you got flat revenue, and yet your profits are cut by nearly 75%. What's that tell you? Their costs are going up. Their power's going up. Their labor's going up. Certainly food is going up. Dave & Buster's is getting clobbered here by cost inflation and by a consumer who can't afford higher prices. And the stock is paying the price this morning. Look at this, down 18.7% ahead of the opening bell. $19.65 for Dave & Buster's, now down big year to date. And I wanted to talk about this one. Shout out to Anna Wong. That's Anna Economist on Twitter, who posted this yesterday. Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about the initial jobless claims and that big spike of 30,000 initial unemployment claims from the week earlier. Well, it looks like that wasn't real, or at least that's according to the Texas Workforce Commission. Fraud-fueled jobless claims spike in Texas, a state official says. Now, I can't find this anywhere in the actual media, just this Bloomberg terminal reference. The spike in initial applications for unemployment benefits in Texas seen in data released last week was caused by an increase in fraudulent claim attempts, according to a state official. The increase in initial claims for unemployment insurance in the week ending September 6th is directly related to an increased volume of fraudulent claim attempts, Sarah Fisher, the press officer for the Texas Workforce Commission, said in a statement. Since Labor Day, we've observed an uptick in identity fraud claim attempts aimed at exploiting the unemployment insurance system. The Texas Workforce Commission is currently working to detect and shut down these suspicious claims. Guys, look, this is the unemployment claims. They spiked by about 32,000 for the week ended September 6th. Almost half of that spike, 15,000, came from Texas alone. And it looks like a major chunk of those 15,000 were fraud. Keep in mind, you had big floods in Texas over the summer. And whenever there's a big disaster, you tend to get a spike in unemployment claims. And we've seen this now in several states following several disasters. The fraud spikes along with it. Unfortunately, there are no shortage of leeches and parasites in society who will take advantage of people's misery to steal a little bit of money from the taxpayers. That appears to have driven that spike in unemployment insurance last week. We also got retail sales data this morning, and it was pretty good. August retail sales increased 5% year over year. That's up from a 3.9% increase for the month of July. So look, the consumer is still spending, guys. That's the takeaway here. I'm not sure this is good news. I mean, certainly it's going to help drive earnings for S&P 500 companies, but I suspect most of this 5% increase is being driven by credit card debt and buy now, pay later, and therefore it's not really good sales, good organic growth in the economy. And the fact that every time we see interest rates tick down a little bit, we get this big spike in refinance applications in the mortgage market. That tells me people are using their home equity to pay off their higher interest credit card debt that they're racking up because of these increases in consumer spending. And compare that with, well, the problems in the job market. You can see stress building up in the economy. We've also got on a month-over-month basis, they rose 0.6%. That is basically in line with what we had July, 0.6% month-over-month previously. No big deal there. Now we got China. They issue a new plan to aid consumption by focusing on services. We got kind of a little, I don't know, what would you call this? Like a half-assed stimulus measure coming from China this morning. And it's all about services. China's trying to transition from a production to a consumer-driven economy. China announced wide-ranging measures to stimulate domestic demand by promoting the consumption of services such as sports and entertainment. It's the latest attempt to help an economy grappling with slower growth. The plan issued on Tuesday by the Ministry of Commerce, along with several other departments, doesn't introduce more funding or subsidies for the service sector, but the 19 measures it outlines indicate the government will use its budget to develop the necessary infrastructure and guide banks to lend more to service providers along with consumers. The effort builds on Beijing's attempt in recent months to overcome an imbalance afflicting the world's second biggest economy between industrial production and consumer spending. As part of the new initiative, China will extend the operating hours of museums and tourist sites, host more sporting events, and allow more companies to enter such industries as high-end medical care, according to an action plan published by the state broadcaster CCTV. It will also expand visa-free access to more countries, adding to similar rules introduced with dozens of nations. So the Chinese are trying to spur services consumption as goods consumption falls. You've got deflation problems in China. You've got a collapsing real estate market. You've got problems with excess production capacity in their manufacturing sector. That's being exacerbated by the trade war. And really what China's trying to do here is kind of like fast forward what the U.S. economy went through throughout the 20th century, right? In the 1900s, we went from very rapidly from an agrarian society to an industrial production-driven society in World War II and post-World War II. And then from there in the 70s and 80s, we transitioned into a consumer and a services-led economy. And China's trying to do all of this in a span of like 20, 25 years. And they're trying to do it through central planning. My guess is it's going to blow up in their face the more you try to control your economy, the more the economy is going to laugh at you. Let's just put it that way. And we got this one going on this morning. More bad news in the renewable sector. Now, this is kind of interesting because we just got done talking about how nobody wanted to bid on the power in China for a solar auction. And then late last week, we talked about how Ørsted was raising all this money at like a 67% discount to the closing price on Friday. Actually, that was just yesterday. Now we got bad news for renewables in Australia. Australia delays the first offshore wind auction as global investment retreats. This sector is in big trouble here. Australia's Victoria state has postponed its inaugural auction for offshore wind farm funding, citing global investment hurdles in a setback to an industry deemed vital to the country's transition from coal-fired power to renewable energy. The state government confirmed on Tuesday that it would delay the auction process, which had been scheduled for this month, and would release a revised timeline by the year end. Minister for Energy and Resources Lily D'Ambrosio said global investment headwinds meant an auction now would risk attracting too few participants. We're afraid of price discovery. So if we don't hold the auction, nothing really goes down. As the global market for offshore wind investment changes, we're making sure the auction is competitive and attractive and will release a new timeline for this process later this year, she said. The Gippsland Zone auction would have been Australia's first opportunity for developers to bid for government underwriting support. Winning projects would be guaranteed a fixed price for power generated through a system known as Contract for Difference. The guarantee would help give companies investment certainty needed to build the large, expensive farms Australia wants due to their capacity to generate more power than existing onshore farms. So look, even with the government guaranteeing sales, guaranteeing prices for the electrical output of these things, they can't get anybody to come in and bid on this. What are they talking about? Bidding government underwriting support. Nobody wants to build these things, even with price guarantees from the government. The renewable sector, guys, they just took it too far, too fast, much like EVs. They tried to force this transition down people's throats. It didn't work. They wasted a lot of money. They drove up power prices. And now the world is heading into a recession and it just doesn't want this stuff. There's no way to sugarcoat it, guys. The world just doesn't want it. And look, guys, that's pretty much all we got for today. It's been a pretty quiet morning. The whole world is just sitting here waiting for the Federal Reserve. Everybody's like, just like, okay, when do I get my 25 basis points? And then we can decide what we're going to do. Be careful here, guys. I'm seeing a lot of stuff. Just a side note here. I'm seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter and on YouTube about how everybody's saying the dollar is dying and everything is going to keep going straight up. And 100% of the time when the Fed cuts interest rates at all-time highs, stocks rally 15% coming out. Like all these uber, uber bullish predictions. Everybody is uber bullish. Everybody in the world knows for a fact that stocks are going to go up when the Fed cuts. Be careful. When everybody knows the same thing, that usually means it's going to go the opposite way. That also means literally everybody is all in on this market. Everybody except me. Everybody else is literally all in on this market. So there is a risk for a sell the news event on this Fed rate cut. That's the one thing I would point out here, guys. So be careful as always. Be careful on leverage. That's the one thing I would plant that idea in your head. And I just want to say thank you very much, TK, for being a Melonhead member for 9 months, who says whole planet is cutting rates. No crypto winter. So it's different this time. Is it, TK? I don't know about that. I don't know. I mean, I have heard it's different this time because they're cutting. I've heard it's different this time because of ETFs, that's new. I'm not necessarily sure that's correct, right? Interest rates were near zero in 2021. I mean, they were negative in parts of the world when FTX collapsed. I mean, interest rates could not have possibly gone any lower, and that wasn't enough to prevent FTX from collapsing. And right now, what I'm seeing with these crypto treasury companies, it's obscene. I mean, it's so patently ridiculous how some Hong Kong shitco that's probably on the brink of bankruptcy can say in a press release, we're borrowing $100 million to buy Fartcoin, and all of a sudden it's got a $5 billion market cap. That's pets.com all over again. So I'd be careful to say it can't happen here, or to be careful to say this time is different. I've been speculating for a while that MicroStrategy was going to be the failure mechanism this time around that leads to crypto winter. Maybe it's not Strategy specifically. Maybe it's one of these other levered up shitcoin holding treasury companies, or maybe it's something we haven't seen yet. I don't know. But to say it can't happen or it won't happen, again, it happened the last three times right at the 75-week window. Maybe this time's different, maybe not. Just be careful on leverage. That's the one thing I would say. Thank you, TK, for being a Melonhead for 9 months. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. We're going to cut it there. I yield back your time due to the slow news cycle. Don't forget that like button and the subscribe button on your way out, though. Thank you so much to my magnanimous Melonheads for your support on Patreon and Twitter, Patreon and YouTube. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.